Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. I hope you have been enjoying the extra content that we have been adding into the feed over the past couple of months. But it is time to get back to the real reason you come to Variant Frequencies, our stories. We have a good one for you today. It is written by Anne Stringer. And we have one of our favorite narrators back for it. The narrator is Ian Jones. Anyone who has listened to the Failed Cities monologues by Matt Wallace is very familiar with the wonderful voice of Ian Jones. Ian was Truck in the Failed Cities monologues. His character in this story is a little less sure of himself, but Ian delivers it in style. Now, on to our story, Penny Ante by Anne Stringer. It's just a friendly, low-stakes game of five-card draw. Sure, it's a weird place for poker. But don't let that bother you. We don't bet much because we don't have much. We're a little picky about who we let sit in. But it looks like you'll meet the qualifications. And we need some new blood in the game. You win?
Nobody ever wanted to go to the morgue, especially at night. Of course, that's always been true, but back then it was worse. It wasn't all nice, sanitary, stainless steel drawers that kept the chilled corpses out of view. No, then it was a big tiled room that smelled of preserving chemicals. The autopsy table was right there in front of you as soon as you walked in. A big metal door at one end opened up to the cooler, and that's where the stiffs went. They should have been cleaned up and shrouded, but that particular effort wasn't always made. I never knew what I was going to find when I opened that door. It always seemed wrong to me that I had to be the one to open the door. The nurses made a hell of a lot more than I did, but I got the dirty jobs. At a veterans hospital, there were a lot of dirty jobs, and heavy jobs. They pushed them off on us orderlies every chance they could. I suppose I shouldn't be so critical of them. They worked hard, too. I had to clean up after codes sometimes, and I could tell it had been fucking chaos. But I really hated going to the morgue, and it seemed like it always came down to me. They told me I could get security to escort me. But fuck that, man. I'd never lived that down, and those guys were more scared than I was. So there I was, pushing one of those creaky old gurneys down the long corridor to the morgue. Poor old sucker's last ride at the VAH. Once they're dead, comfort isn't a concern anymore. So the cart doesn't even have a pad. One of the wheels wobbled, and all I could think of was if the cart tipped and that stiff hit the floor, I was fucked. He was a big guy. No way I was moving him by myself. At least it distracted me from the usual crap. The here I am, 26 years old and going nowhere crap. That's what usually looped through my head on the long walk to the morgue. 18 and out is what my mother always said. I thought she was kidding like they do. Can't wait for the kids to be out of the house, that shit, but she wasn't. As soon as I had my high school diploma, she gave me an eviction notice. If I didn't go, she'd put my stuff outside and change the locks. Not that I'd ever considered myself college material, but damn. I joined the army, did my time, served my country. If I expected that to pave my way to success, I was disappointed. I came out like I went in, only older and with tattoos. They had that GI Bill, but education never was my thing, so I got this job at the Veterans Hospital. All those sickly old guys made me feel like I was looking at my future, and it wasn't a pretty picture. Droopy tats, fingertips tobacco stain, coughing up bits of lung while that red shit dripped into their veins. They were cool guys, though. Sometimes I'd sit and talk with them when I had a minute, light their smokes. Back then, they could smoke in the hospital as long as they didn't burn anything. Mostly, they didn't want to talk about their war stuff, though. And it was weird how often they seemed to know when they were going to die. Which led me to wheeling them down the long hall to the morgue, wondering if I'd make that trip someday on my back, wrapped in white. Anyway, this guy was big and the cart was wobbly, a real bad combination. The morgue was in the basement at the end of a long, dark corridor, right out of a horror movie. Worse, there was stuff down there, stuff they didn't have room to store anywhere else. I'm sure that was breaking some fire safety rules. I fully expected something to jump out at me from behind some of that shit. But we made it to the morgue door. Then I had to open it and maneuver the damn cart through, pulling with one hand and holding the door with the other. I was actually sweating by that time. Fortunately, it was empty and pretty clean in there. I've walked in on autopsies, almost lost my lunch. But this was around 3 a.m, so nothing was going on. I just had to shove the cart in the cooler, and then I could get the hell out of there. Well, it couldn't be that easy. There were already 3 occupied carts in there, so I had to rearrange them to fit mine in. One of them must have come from the ICU. They hadn't even pretended to clean him up or wrap him. He had one of those breathing tubes down his throat and an IV right in his neck. He was all bruised up and swollen. At least they'd tagged his toe. So I moved the poor bastard out of the way and turned to pull my guy in. And then the fucker moved his foot. I must have jumped back about 3 feet and crashed into another cart. Almost pissed myself. I stood there staring at those cold blue feet, holding my breath. They didn't move again naturally, and I felt like an idiot, letting my imagination get away from me and all that. My mother's stupid superstitions. I made a sign of the cross anyway, and then I pulled that cart with the fresh corpse into the cooler and wedged it in between 2 of the other ones. That's when I heard a voice behind me. "What do you think, John?" it said. "That one gonna work?" I jumped again. "God damn it!" I shouted, turning. Fucking security guards messing with... But nobody was there. "Watch your language, son," a gruff voice said. "That's the Lord's name you're taking in vain." Outside the cooler, then. The door was swinging shut, and for a second, that made me panic. Even though I knew I wasn't going to be locked in. The door has a handle on the inside. Still, I scrambled for it and I made it out before it latched. I almost lost my footing on the tiles. Sitting there, around the autopsy table, were 4 old guys in hospital pajamas. They had cards in their hands and chips on the table. All 4 stared at me and I stared back at them. Finally, one of them puffed his cigar and blew smoke at me. "I'll deal you in next hand if you want." "What the hell?" "You're a vet, ain't you, boy?" another one said, studying his cards. "I work here," I managed. "Well, yeah, we know, but you're a veteran, right?" "Yeah, what the hell are you guys doing in here?" They traded glances and smiled. "Poker," the one with the cigar said. "We're playing poker." "But why here?" I shouted. "This is the morgue, for Christ's sakes. You can't be in here. It's off limits to patients." "No, it ain't," another said, with a pointed glance at the cooler. "Relax, son. We ain't hurting anything." He laid his cards face down and extended a hand toward me. "I'm Henry Ogle. I was in Korea." He appeared to be the youngest of the group at the table. I shook his hand, found it cool and dry. "That there's John Klink," he continued, pointing at the barrel-chested guy with the cigar. "John was at Pearl Harbor, you know, when the Japs attacked." Leaning closer and lowering his voice, he added, "He'll tell you more than you ever wanted to know about it. And then he'll tell you again." "I heard that," John said. Henry ignored him and nodded toward a bald, thin, wasted-looking guy. He looked like those cancer patients just before the end, hunched over like he couldn't hold his own weight up anymore. "The Ohio kid," he said. "World War I. "The Great War," Ohio corrected him. Henry rolled his eyes. "The Great War," he said. "We don't know his real name, but he's got this tattoo, so we call him the Ohio kid." Ohio pulled up the sleeve and showed me a blue design inked onto his ropey deltoid. It looked like a shield with the words, "The Ohio Kid," on it. I was pretty amazed that anybody from that war was still around. But Henry had an even bigger surprise for me. "Finally," he said, "rounding out the table, we have Cornelius Wilson, Spanish-American War." Claims he was a Rough Rider, but... Henry shrugged. I stared in open amazement. The thing was, Cornelius didn't look any older than the Ohio Kid and definitely looked healthier. "So," John said, "you got a name, son?"
I'm Ramon Gutierrez. I'm an orderly up on 6 West, orthopedics and urology.
"Recepcion al wingo, Ramon," said Cornelius, rolling his R's grandly.
"Sorry," I said, "fourth generation American. I don't speak Spanish."
"But you're a vet," Henry asked again.
Yeah, medic in Nam. I really didn't like to talk about it either.
"Okay," John said. "Next hand."
The Ohio Kid glared over his cards at John. "He's too young."
"I really got to get back," I said, edging toward the door. I slipped out and walked away as fast as I could without looking like I was running. Curiosity got the better of me, and I glanced back before I reached the elevator. But the door to the morgue was closed. On the ride up, I decided not to tell anybody. Let the old geezers have their fun. I sure as hell was some weird shit, though. I had trouble sleeping that day.
I thought about them a lot the next time I worked, too. I considered trying to look them up, see if they were still around and how they were doing. None of them were on 6 West. But before I got the chance, I had to set up traction on some guy in the ICU. The night went to hell after that. Put the poker game right out of my head. For the next few weeks, I fell back into the usual routine of fetching, toting, cleaning, lifting, carting patients around, thinking about my non-existent future. I wondered about the game in the morgue from time to time, but I couldn't bring myself to go down there. It's the morgue, after all. Then I rotated to the day shift for a while, and there's shit that goes on down there during the day. I wrapped and transported bodies then, but I wasn't going to walk in on any card game while there was an autopsy going on. By then, I decided it must have been a one-time thing anyway. And then I was back on nights. And then the day came that I was asked to take a body to the morgue. It was some old guy who'd been drinking for years. Cirrhosis, the nurse told me, when I asked her about the man's pregnant-looking belly. The yellow skin, the liquid dripping off his bed. Nastiest thing I'd ever seen. We wrapped him up, slid him over to the cart, and I headed for the elevator. I rolled the cart out on the basement level and headed for the morgue with mixed anticipation and dread. The long corridor held no surprises, and I made it to the morgue door. I listened at it before opening it. It occurred to me that it was as quiet as a tomb, which made me smile, and I opened the door. There was no game going on at the autopsy table. I was almost disappointed. The guy with the big belly went into the cooler where he lay all by himself. All that worry for nothing. I went back out of the cooler and headed for the door. There they were, sitting around the table like they'd been there all along. John Clink puffing his cigar. Henry Ogle studying his cards and frowning. The Ohio Kid hunched over in his chair. The Spanish-American war guy wasn't there, though. Somebody else had taken his place. He was bruised and swollen, wearing nothing but a hospital gown, and he scratched idly at an IV tube stuck in his neck. Suddenly, I realized where I had seen him before, and my ass almost hit the floor, like my legs wouldn't hold me up anymore. It couldn't be right, but he looked just like the guy I'd seen weeks ago from the ICU. In the cooler, on a stretcher. The dead guy who moved his foot. I looked at his feet, and they were blue, and there was a tag looped around his big toe. The Ohio Kid looked up at me and smiled. "About damn time," he said. Put his cards down on the table and started to rise. I backed away from them. "Hold on, goddammit," I said. "You can't be here. You can't." Only I didn't mean it the same way this time. "You," I said, pointing a shaky finger at the ICU guy, "you were dead.
I saw you in the cooler. You had that breathing tube.
He nodded.
Couldn't stand the damn thing, he said in a raspy, hoarse voice. And I couldn't talk around it, so I took it out. You gonna join the game or what?
Yeah, said John Clink, flicking ashes from his cigar, ashes that disappeared before they hit the floor.
Sit in a few hands.
The Ohio kid, having got to his feet, just stared at me with an impatient look. Hell no, I said, backing toward the door, wondering what I'd done to deserve hallucinations like this. John shrugged.
Suit yourself, he said, turning his attention back to his cards. Watch out for the spill.
The body with cirrhosis had been leaking all the way to the morgue, apparently. There was a puddle near the door. I looked down just in time to see my foot hit it.
Walking backwards is a really bad idea.
My foot slipped, my flailing arm crashed through some glass jars, and my head cracked on the corner of the counter. The guys told me I laid there for a long time, bleeding on the floor. Nobody goes to the morgue at night if they don't have to. That was a long time ago. I'm not sure how long, because I don't really have a reference for time passage anymore. But I'll bet it's been years. I freaked a little at first, trying to get away from there. But every door led back to the morgue. I finally gave up and took my place at the table. The Ohio kid smiled, straightened, and disappeared. It's a different place now. One wall is lined with shiny steel drawers, like a giant morbid filing cabinet. Only they hold bodies instead of papers. Cooler is gone and all the nasty stuff is hidden away. We got a whole separate area for autopsies. John Clink is still there. Still has his cigar, still talks about Pearl Harbor, whether we listen or not. Henry Ogle's there too. He wins most of the time. We don't play for anything though. We don't have anything. And each of us will leave only when it's our turn. The guy from the ICU, still wearing the old-style hospital gown and the IV in his neck, snarls at his cards a lot. And then there's me, in my white orderly's uniform with bloodstains up the arm. We hear the creak of the cart coming up the hall. Some things never change, I guess. John Clink takes a cigar from his mouth and grins. I think I hear the sound of a new recruit, he says. I glare at him. Shut up and deal.
Thank you for listening to Penny Ante by Ann Stringer, narrated by Ian Jones. The music for this story was provided by Digital Juice. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Oh, hey, Hutch! What's up, Hutch? Man, how you been, player?
Oh, okay, since I got on these new meds.
Haha, new meds, that's awesome, man. Man, I haven't seen you since the parsecs last year, when you totally lost it and went on that profanity-laced verbal vomit rant. Man, that was hysterical.
I had to go see a therapist for it. She said I have deep emotional scars, dude.
You do?
Yep.
You're serious?
Yeah, man. It's a serious condition. And I have to be careful of the word parsecs. It can really set me off.
Uh-huh.
That's what the meds are for. Ever since last year's parsecs, I keep swearing uncontrollably.
Ah. Wow. Well then, is it bad for me to say that the fourth annual Parsec Awards will be held at DragonCon 2009 in Atlanta, September 4th through the 7th.
No, it's okay. I can handle the parsecs.
Yeah, clearly.
Can people still submit their fiction podcasts at www.parsecawards.com?
Hell yes, they can. People can go there to nominate their favorite podcast, novel, short story, fan cast, and new categories like Best Anime Podcast, Best New Speculative Fiction Podcaster Team, and Best Speculative Fiction Music Podcast.
Well, we have to get people to go nominate. Those judges give every award to Matt Wallace, the giant-sized bastard. I mean, you and I have been in this game for longer than anyone, and we can't keep getting shut out. I mean...
Hutch!
What?
I won one last year.
Won a what?
A parsec.
You won a parsec?
Yeah, afraid so.
Well, motherfucking shit-eating son of a...
Uh-oh.
Suckers, they should just take that parsec and stick it right into their hole. I mean, fucking in and out, like a little dipstick.
Judah. Whoa.
These guys, every single time, I'm the only one left who hasn't won a fucking parsec.
I tell
you what I'm going to do, Scott Sigler. I'm going to go to DragonCon, I'm going to put my foot so far up their fucking asses, they're going to be flossing with my fucking shoestrings.
Dude, there's a vein pulsing in your neck, in your head.
Llama fuckers. Yes, they are llama fuckers, and they are sucking shit-eating burgers.
Oh, man, this is awesome.
The grand design of nine.
Those words haunt the mind of Brinkvale psychiatric therapist Zach Taylor when his elderly patient, a remorseless killer, utters that phrase. Zach embarks on a quest to glean its cryptic meaning. The answers lie with the patient's psychic granddaughter. But Hen is crazier than the people Zach treats, and the mystical great blade of blood he soon pursues may be more dangerous and deadly than Zach ever imagined. J.C. Hutchins' Personal Effects, Sword of Blood, is a prequel audio novella to his supernatural thriller novel, Personal Effects, Dark Art. Learn more about both stories and become a part of the Personal Effects universe at jchutchins.net.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the geeky t-shirt with the kids? Yeah, come over here. I've got a great podcast you should be listening to. It's called How to Grow Your Geek, and it's all about TV shows and movies and games and great things you can do with your kids that you can enjoy together and maybe, just maybe, get your kids to be geeks like you. So come over and visit howtogrowyourgeek.net and see what you might have been missing.
If you're looking for a great way to learn about computers, tech, and what's hot right now, then you should check out The GeekCast. The GeekCast is for computer users of all skill levels and provides tutorials for cleaning up your computer, ditching Internet Explorer, and much, much more. The GeekCast also covers the geek lifestyle, mixing in some gaming, media, and our geek trivia quiz. Each episode is filled with the latest tech news to keep you in the know. To find out more, search for The GeekCast in iTunes or head on over to www.geekcastonline.com to get all the subscription information.